Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to a Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, social justice, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Pat Lyth. Pat, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you.
Pat was born and raised in Hamilton in New Zealand, and she has been heavily involved in Catholic and ecumenical activities since Vatican II. That means for more than 50 years. And since 1992, she's been employed by the Catholic Diocese of Auckland, where she's today the leader of the Pastoral and Parish Services Group. The pastoral office serves the three levels of pastoral councils in the diocese, the parish councils, regional, and the diocesan council. And for many years, Pat was a member of the Auckland Diocesan Committee for Ecumenism and Interfaith Relationships. This coming week, from the 8th to the 15th of May 2016, we will celebrate the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity in New Zealand. Pat, I understand that this Week of Prayer for Christian Unity is celebrated at a different time of the year for those who live in the Northern Hemisphere. Why is this the case?
The original dates in the Northern Hemisphere are between January the 18th and January the 25th, and that those are between the feast days of the Chair of St. Peter and the conversion of St. Paul. That is January in New Zealand and Australia and the Southern Hemisphere's holiday time. So nobody's near a church or nobody is feeling like praying together. So the Southern Hemisphere decided it would make it the week before Pentecost.
So it's closer to the celebration of the Holy Spirit and the unity.
And Pentecost is a feast of unity, yes.
Yeah. And could you please tell us what this week means for us and for Christians of other denominations?
Well, it's been going for a long time now, and it's a conscious effort for all of us to pray together for unity, for coming together as one.
So for all of us, it's all Christian denominations.
All Christians, yes. Yeah, ecumenical means all Christians, not interfaith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And which Christian denominations are really practically involved in the celebration of this week?
In New Zealand, the four mainline churches, Catholic, Presbyterian, Methodist, Anglican, the Society of Friends, the Orthodox, various Orthodox churches, the Lutherans, Salvation Army.
So there are still a lot more denominations, but they are not involved.
Well, they can be. It just depends on, we distribute the material to every church. It's up to them to decide whether they want to join in. What often happens is that the ministers' associations in various suburbs will actually get together and decide how to do it. And it depends who goes to those ministers' associations, whether those churches are involved.
What are these ministers' associations?
Ministers' associations are gatherings of the pastors or priests or ministers in each suburb. And they meet monthly, quite often, or maybe two monthly, just to discuss issues of common interest.
And so the ones who participate there, they are most likely to then follow up with a week of Christian unity.
That's right. In the last probably 15 years, there have been more of the Pentecostal ministers have been going to those meetings. So some of those Pentecostal people will be at the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity as well.
And do they have a specific prayer?
Yes, there is a specific prayer which is prepared. Now, that's a really interesting thing. It's now prepared jointly by the Faith and Order group of the World Council of Churches and the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity together. And it's an international document prepared, and it's sent out to all of the different countries, and they can adapt it according to their circumstances.
I can imagine that's quite a challenge to prepare this prayer when you have many different denominations with different folk. And is it one who suggests it and the other amended, or is it really done in a team?
Well, they work together, but they tend to concentrate on one. They have in the last few years concentrated on one particular country. And this year it's Latvia. Mm-hmm. Next year they're going to concentrate on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So it will be Germany that will be the main country next year. So they bring in a country that they've chosen for various reasons, because usually of a feast day or a special, something of significance in that country, and they contribute to the drawing up of the thing. It takes 18 months, I guess, because they're already planning next year's one.
So if there's a special occasion, yes, in New Zealand, like 250 years of the arrival of the first Christians, then maybe the New Zealanders will prepare the prayer.
You never know. The first prayer that was prepared by a country was prepared by Australia.
For Australia?
Yes.
When was that?
1975.
So yeah. 40 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And since then, every year it's a different,
yes,
country.
Yes, yep.
That's good, because it gets also different aspects of these countries.
It does, and usually in the material is an introduction which talks about why that country was chosen, what specific reason.
And why was Australia chosen in the first place?
I don't remember.
Okay, for those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 a.m. on Planet FM 104.6. And if you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Or check out our Facebook page at Te Ngaka Wai Ora, Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Pat Lyth. Pat is the leader of the Auckland Diocesan Parish and Pastoral Group, and she has a long experience in ecumenism in New Zealand. From 8 to the 15th of May, we are going to celebrate the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. And we've just learned that every year it's another country that prepares the prayer, but it's a prayer that is adapted by all Christians who participate in this Week of Christian Unity. So it'll be translated in many languages.
Yes.
And it's also available on the website for people to download. If you go to the liturgy, National Liturgy Office, there is a link to the Week of Christian Unity, and there you can also download the prayer from one link. Pat, Vatican II opened the doors for the cooperation between different Christian denominations with the document Unitatis Red Integratio, which was on ecumenism. Would you consider this document as a starting point and a permission to get to know other denominations and to work together?
For Catholics.
For Catholics.
Yes, for Catholics, yes. Except that before that there had been cooperation in all sorts of things like inter-hospital chaplaincy and things like that. So they had been cooperating, but they hadn't been intentional getting together to look towards unity. And that document sort of unleashed, if you like, the intention to do something. And in 1964, that document came out. And from then on, there were a joint working group between the National Council of Churches, which had been in existence in New Zealand since 1941, and the Catholics. And that group was supposed to meet for about 3 meetings, and it met for 40 years. And it, in the end, led to what happened was that the National Council of Churches mainly came together to be a lobby group for social action with the government. And so it was into action. And although one of the goals was unity, it was never actually pursued. So and they invited the Catholics to join, but the Catholics didn't want to join just for social action. They wanted to make sure that coming together as a united Church of Christ was one of the goals. So they said no, they wouldn't join the National Council of Churches. So this discussion group between the National Council of Churches and the Catholics decided that, okay, the way to do it would be for the National Council of Churches to disband and there'd be a proposal that there be a new conference of churches in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And that was something that the Catholic bishops put out to all of their people, their parishes, the priest councils, the lay councils, all of the groups, to discuss and to return their recommendations to the bishops. In fact, apart from somebody like myself, who is a result of an ecumenical marriage, my father is Catholic. My mother was Methodist, which is why I'm an ecumeniac. lots of people weren't particularly interested, but those who were interested said, yes, we'd like to join. And so after lots and lots of talking around in 1987, the new Conference of Churches of Aotearoa New Zealand was founded with Catholics as full members. That was really exciting.
And this World Council of that you mentioned before, does it still exist?
The World Council of Churches came into existence in 1948. And
that's as old as the you know.
And still exists and includes all of the Protestant churches plus all of the Orthodox churches. And it has frequently invited the Catholic Church to join, but in fact only churches can be members of the World Council of Churches, and you're there as a proportional representation. And the Catholic Church sees itself as one church, and so if it joined, it would swamp the rest. So the Anglican Church of New Zealand and the Anglican Church of Australia and the Anglican Church of England are all separate members of the World Council of Churches. The Catholic Church doesn't say that. The Catholic Church says we are one universal church. So that's why we've never joined the World Council of Churches. But the World Council of Churches is still very active.
And they might work together with the Catholics.
Work together very strongly, yes.
And yeah. When you mention Protestant churches, that's not Pentecostal.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know where they would call themselves, what they would call themselves. The Protestant churches were the ones that broke away, or the ones that were protested about the Catholic Church. And that's perhaps getting to be an old term now. I'm not sure how relevant it is these days.
Because in German, when you use Protestantism, it's always Lutheran.
Yeah, right.
And in other countries, I'm not so sure.
In New Zealand, it would be Anglican, Methodist, Baptist.
Presbyterian.
Yeah, any of the churches that weren't Catholic. Any of the Christian churches with the leadership structure that weren't Catholic. Now, the Pentecostal churches tend to be quite often one-offs, and so they don't have a leadership structure as such. So I don't know where they would call themselves, whether they will call themselves Protestant or what. I have no idea.
But in this approach for unity, there's also the social concern. It's not that it's kept outside, but the social concern is very much part also of the social encyclical of all the popes.
Well, let me tell you about the voyage, if you like, of the Conference of Churches of Aotearoa New Zealand. It was launched in 1987, and it had 11 goals, one of which was unity. The other 8 or 10 were really about social action, and it was really aimed to be inclusive and diverse and all of those things which were part of the goals. And so there were 3 presidents, there were 3 secretariats, there were all sorts of different programs. And what happened was that the programs really took over the organization. And so the program on racism, the program for women, the women's desk, all of those things became quite active and took a lot of the funding, and the program about unity became very much a secondary part of the whole program, which the Catholics were not happy with, and neither were the Lutherans really. And so there were many reviews of this body and saying, look, this is one of the reasons we've come together. In fact, it's the main reason we've come together, because we've always done social action together, but we're really wanting to pursue proper unity. And so there were lots of reviews, and in the end, it just wasn't working. So the Catholics withdrew, unfortunately, in 1998, and the whole conference itself collapsed in 2000 because there weren't enough funders, because the churches paid for it to run, to keep it going. So although it was a wonderful 11 years or so, it didn't last. And ever since then, there's been efforts to get together to have another ecumenical body, which has only just come to fruition and in a very minor way recently.
And what is that called?
It's called the National Dialogue for Christian Unity. And it just involves the Anglicans, Methodists and Catholics
Are they the most closest?
No, it's been, the discussions have been going for 8 years and involved all of the churches who were part of the Conference of Churches and part of the National Council of Churches, but not all of them could agree that the about unity as being the sole, the main goal. So, and some of the churches, like the Presbyterian Church, would normally be part of that because it's one of the four main churches in New Zealand, but it's got its own internal divisions at the moment, so they're concentrating on that. And so that's, so the three churches decided they'd go ahead anyway and they'd get started and anybody can join them at any time. So they just had its very first meeting last week.
Oh, just before the week of Christian Unity.
Yes, yes. And all we did was get to know each other, really.
How many members are there?
There are three members. There are three members from each church and three officers, so there are only six people on
them. That's a good group for fruitful discussion.
Yeah.
So what is the goal for the next year to come?
To talk about the theological things that we share in common and to examine the ones that we have difficulty over.
Can you mention an example of one and of the other one?
We have a joint understanding of baptism. We have a joint understanding of, we don't have a joint understanding of Eucharist, but we understand each other's viewpoint on Eucharist, and we don't have a joint understanding of ministry, ordination, for example, because the Catholics don't believe in ordination of women at this stage. So there are, you know, and what is it that we can be united with and still hold differently? So it's complicated, but it's interesting.
And what is the goal? If there is the unity, is it about more understanding, or is it really to become then one church?
To become one church is the ultimate goal. And for Catholics, it's very difficult because, it's not difficult, but the decisions about those things are made in Rome. So although this is a New Zealand organisation, we can only share those things that we know we can share, and some things we all have to wait. But Francis gives us hope.
And are there similar movements in other countries?
Yes, there are. Yeah, yes. But it's theological talk as well, so it's not attractive to people. You know, it's more, okay, what are the things that we believe that we agree on? What are the things we don't believe in? How can we sort those out? Whereas let's lobby the government about poverty and let's lobby the government about poor people. We can easily do that together, and we're doing that. I mean, lots of organisations are doing that together. So, but we still need to try and become close, because unless we are united, we give a divided picture to the rest of the world.
Because then you cannot speak out of the point of view of a Christian. You can only speak of your point of view.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So, and the other thing that has probably come into the mix in New Zealand is that there are a lot more people of different faiths than Christian faith. Because once upon a time, you were either Christian or you weren't. But you weren't Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu or Jewish in this country. And now there are lots of people of other faiths, which is great. And that's become the flavour of the month. So interfaith relations has actually got more attraction for people than ecumenical relations, because we'd got to a stage, I think, for many people thought we'd got to a stage where we couldn't go any further.
Do you think that some people gave up?
Yes, they did. Yep.
But now it's 50 years since that document, and what has the Vatican been doing during the 50 years? Are they more practical help, or is there anything? Yeah.
Well, you know, there is a huge difference. My mother, who was not Catholic, had to be married in the broom cupboard. She wasn't allowed to be married in front of the altar because she wasn't a Catholic. I wasn't allowed to go to my grandmother's funeral because she was Methodist and I was Catholic. So all of those things have gone. You know, we're no longer suspicious of each other. And we no longer say that we are the one true church. We all say Christ formed the one true church, and we're all trying to come back together in that one true church. So there has been a lot of progress. It's just glacially slow in terms of the real sticking points, which are Eucharist and ministry, if you like, Eucharist and ordination.
Do the children get some teaching about ecumenism?
Yes, they do. There's a very good book written by Jocelyn Armstrong, who was one of the National Council of Churches and the Conference of Churches staff people. She's written a very good book, which is an option for secondary schools.
Because I could imagine if children don't go to a Catholic school, but even if they go to a Catholic school, do they learn about the other denominations and the other faiths?
There's a little bit, tiny bit in the curriculum, not a lot. It's really an option.
Is that maybe one of the, could be one of the goals of a group of people of different denominations coming together and also promoting, well, we'll have...
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Lots of secondary schools actually do collaborate with other denominations in social action. So, again, it's the social action thing which brings people together in the first place. And once you're friends and you're doing something with those people, it often leads to further discussion about what unites us and what divides us.
So I remember when I was a child, and it was way after Vatican II, we had our opening, we always had an opening service when the school year started. And one year it was done in the Catholic Church and one year in the Lutheran Church. And that was the only time that I ever entered the Lutheran Church in my hometown. So that's one of the achievements from Vatican II. But it took a while until it was really implemented. I think there was still the suspicion.
Yeah, and our New Zealand history is somewhat different, but the English came, were Anglicans or Methodists, and when the French came, they were Papists. So it was English versus French as well as Protestant versus Catholic, and that took a long time to go. You know, there were lots of jobs advertised, Catholics need not apply. So that,
really?
Yes. Earlier last century. So it took a long time. When I went to school, there was a state school just around the corner, and they would walk on one side of the footpath and I would walk on the other, and they would sing Catholic, Catholic, ring the bell, Catholic, Catholic, go to hell. So that's in the 50s and 60s. Not till Vatican II did that sort of start to break down. So we were very suspicious of them and they were very suspicious of us. And that's partly because of the history that they brought from their countries.
From Europe, yeah.
Yes.
I think it would be important to let people know, especially younger generation, how it used to be in New Zealand within only 5 years, 50
yes.
years, there have been so many changes
yes.
that you take for granted today.
Yes, yes. And I'm really excited. And I was absolutely devastated when the Conference of Churches collapsed and that we pulled out and that we couldn't actually work together to you know, keep talking to each other. So I'm delighted that we've started again. It's just a shame that we've gone backwards.
But you've planted,
to go forward.
You've planted a new seed.
Yes.
And with the support of new teachings, new open doors.
Yes.
So
yes.
Hopefully it will be open for other churches.
I hope so. There is we're calling them participating observers. So the Presbyterians and the Society of Friends and the Salvation Army have applied for participating observer status, which means they can participate in the discussions. They can become full members if they want to later on. So,
didn't some Protestant churches also send representatives, observers to Vatican II?
Yes, that's right, yep.
And, so there was already a sign.
And even Leo XIII had talked about joining together with other Christians. So it's not as if, it's just that there was lots of sectarian jealousy, but in fact, at the top level, there was always the possibility of unity, possibility of we could talk to each other.
And now in New Zealand, there are also many different Orthodox churches.
Yes.
Are they getting involved in...
Well, they were part of the Council of Conference of Churches of Aotearoa New Zealand. They were part of the... No, they weren't part of the National Council of Churches, but they were part of the Conference of Churches of Aotearoa. And I don't know where they are in this National Dialogue for Christian Unity, but I think they were involved in the discussions and... they will come on board if they want to.
Because there are also quite a few different...
That's right. Romanian and Greek and Russian and Assyrian. Yes, yes.
And what about the ethnic groups when you have these meetings about ecumenism? Do you also have different ethnic groups represented? Because I think that some countries, like even Fiji, and so they have different denominations within their islands. And in Samoa, they're Methodists and Catholics. And
The Methodist Church at the moment, its president is from the Samoan Minota part of the Methodist Church. And so they see the Methodist Church of New Zealand as embracing both of those, the same as the Anglican Church has three tikanga, tikanga Pacifica, tikanga Māori, and tikanga Pākehā. And they're three parts of the same church. And so whichever tikanga nominate somebody onto a body, they report back to the other group. So they embrace the ethnic groups within their denominations. We do too. Now, the other thing that I didn't say is that the Maori Council of Churches, Te Runonga I Whakawhanonga I Aotearoa, was actually formed before the Conference of Churches, and it's still going.
So that's another hope.
Yeah.
So, and do you work together with them?
We do. We did. We did.
Well, with a new
group.
Yes,
that's right. That's right. There's a whole lot of relationships to actually start to put into place with the new group,
yeah,
which we haven't even got to grips with yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish you all the best. And it's a huge challenge, and I hope this time it will succeed.
I hope so too.
And we have open doors, and I think that we just have to promote it also among people who take it for granted what we can do today and what we couldn't do 50 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, we're looking at a society that only 50% of us say we're Christian in this country now.
At least these 50 should not fight.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pat, for coming to the interview. I think we'll have to continue about talking about the history of ecumenism, and maybe you can let us know how it's going with the new group, and wish you all the best. Thank you. And to our listeners, what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? On Wednesday, the 11th of May, we'll have Sister Anne Warren with us, who will give a presentation on Francis de Sales, a man of wisdom. Francis de Sales was a fascinating bishop and doctor of the church who introduced spiritual direction for lay people. He so much inspired Don Bosco that his followers are called Salesians. St. Francis de Sales also became known for his gentle approach to the religious divisions after the Protestant Reformation in his native country, Switzerland. So I think it fits very well in just after the week of Christian unity to listen to Anne Warren about Francis de Sales. That's Wednesday, the 11th of May from 10 o'clock to noon. And one of our special events this year will be a retreat day with Monica Brown on Saturday, the 14th of May. Monica Brown is a musician, a poet, and a storyteller. And she comes from Australia, and she will lead us on a heart's journey, a sacred journey. On our Facebook, you will find some samples of her music. And there's more information about Monica also on our website and the Facebook page. Please note that this event will take place at St. Columba Center in Vermont Street, Ponsonby. For all our events, please register. You can do so via phone at 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you, Pat, for coming.